When I first conceived of this series of sermons on futures that we have been following this last month, I was delighted to research all the many inventions and the discoveries and the predictions of the future. There were many really, truly amazing and exciting discoveries, like diamond nanostring, the hardest man-made matter that allowed the imagination to spin wide our possibilities. But the more I read and thought about the future, the more I felt that we weren't really taking the future seriously. And as I said in my last sermon, the future is really not about the new toys. I think today, we're actually afraid of the future. And in this fear, we've gotten stuck. We've gotten stuck because we don't have the support systems or the infrastructure to address this fear. And in many cases, people are not even aware that they are afraid. The following reading was given to me by Beacon member Renee Spakowski. It's been around for a long time, but it was new to me. It may be familiar to you. It was written by Dr. Bob Moorhead, the former pastor of Seattle's Overlake Christian Church. It appears under the title, The Paradox of Our Age, in Words Aptly Spoken, which is a collection of his prayers, homilies, and monologues. It was published in 1995. So the paradox of our age. We have taller buildings but shorter tempers, wider freeways but narrower viewpoints. We spend more but have less. We buy more but enjoy it less. We have bigger houses and smaller families, more conveniences yet less time. We have more degrees but less sense, more knowledge but less judgment. More experts, yet more problems. We have more gadgets, but less satisfaction. More medicine, yet less wellness. We take more vitamins, but see fewer results. We drink too much, smoke too much, spend too recklessly, laugh too little, drive too fast, get too angry quickly, stay up too late, get up too tired, read too seldom, watch TV too much, and pray too seldom. We have multiplied our possessions but reduced our values. We fly in faster planes to arrive there quicker, to do less and return sooner. We sign more contracts only to realize fewer profits. We talk too much, love too seldom, lie too often. We've learned how to make a living, but not a life. We've added years to life, not life to years. We've been all the way to the moon and back, but have trouble crossing the street to meet the new neighbor. We've conquered outer space, but not inner space. We've done larger things, but not necessarily better things. We've cleaned up the air, but polluted the soil, the soul. We've split the atom, but not our prejudice. We write more, but learn less, plan more, accomplish less. We make faster planes, but longer lines. We've learned to rush and not to wait. We have more weapons, but less peace, higher incomes, but lower morals. More parties, but less fun, more food, but less appeasement. More acquaintances, but fewer friends, more effort, but less success. We build more computers to hold more information, to produce more copies than ever, but have less communication. We drive smaller cars that have bigger problems, build larger factories that produce less. We've become long on quantity, but short on quality. These are the times of fast foods and slow digestion. Tall men, but short characters, steep in profits, but shallow relationships. These are times of world peace, but domestic warfare. More leisure and less fun. Higher postage, but slower mail. More kinds of food, but less nutrition. These are days of two incomes, but more divorces. These are times of fancier houses, but broken homes. These are days of quick trips, disposable diapers, cartridge living, throwaway morality, one-night stands, overweight bodies, and pills that do everything from cheer to prevent quiet or kill. It is a time where there is much in the show window and very little in the stockroom. Indeed, these are the times. Indeed. These are the times. Dr. Moorhead's point is that this time we live in is a paradox of too much of what we don't need and not enough of what we really do need. How do we start to make sense of it all? How do we respond and how do we make choices about our future from this deluge of paradox? And what kind of future are we talking about? Read Dr. Moorhead's words, I feel a little overwhelmed and perhaps a little lost in it all. Not that other periods of history didn't have times of paradox and choices that overwhelmed. What I hear and feel in the response to these paradoxes is that there is a terrific tension in our lives today. Tension created by forces outside of us and forces inside of us, vying for our attention, our time, our thoughts. What is at stake is our sense of who we are and what we hold of value. Do you sometimes find yourself yearning for a simpler life? A life where you don't have to make so many important choices. A life where the choices are straightforward, either just this or that. But it's not the world we live in today. It's a time of complexity. And the choices we think that we're making may not have anything to do with what we really care about, what we really put our faith into. And every day we are making choices about our future and the future of our children's children's children. I think if we were to sit with that, really feel down into the bones, the reality of that, it would be overwhelming. There are very few touchstones in our society where we can go and feel solid ground, where we can rest on a bedrock of reality, where we can rest from the tensions of our times. We live in a time of anxiety. We have become anxious people. One in four Canadians describe their jobs as highly stressful. One in four. Since 1987, hospital admissions for anxiety have increased by 49%. There's been a tenfold increase in anxiety disability in Canada since that same year. Partly because of the DSM redefinition of the symptoms of anxiety, and partly because we are afraid of so much today, and partly because we do not have the support systems or the skills to address these fears. Medicating ourselves is not the only choice that we have. The anxiety that sweeps our world is a symptom of our times. It is everywhere and nowhere. It's invaded our bodies and disconnected us from the balancing wisdom of nature and our own inner voices of wisdom. For some, it's like being caught in a whirlwind. It's time to take a step back from this fear, or we will be making choices in our lives based on that fear rather than based on things that we really care about, that we really know that are important, like love, compassion, and justice, and dreaming. Now, I'm not saying that fear isn't real. If you're feeling it, it's real. If you're anxious, you're afraid. I also think that this is a cultural whirlwind that's caught us all up, and we're needing a bit of a time out to get clear about what it is that is worthy of our fear and what is not worthy of it. My talk today is on our future and how we're making decisions today that will become our children's future. And if our choices today are coming out of this whirlwind of anxiety, then we are creating a future that is a structure of fear. Fear produces three responses. You know that what they are: fight, flight, and freezing. Each one of these creates a specific kind of future. The fear response of flight is about running away, escapism, diversion, distraction. This is the future where we plug in and turn off, where the population will focus on having a good time through consumption and indulgence, overstimulation, overeating, living in a simulated fantasy world. One possible future. The fear response of fight produces a future of aggression, brutality, violence, inhumanity, cruelty, unkindness. This is a future of bigger jails, the suspension of civil liberties, police equipped with riot gear confronting peaceful protests, a future of walls surrounding communities and walls surrounding countries. The fear response of freezing creates a future of numbness, of denial, sleepiness, loneliness, isolation. This is a world of frozen smiles and frozen hearts, where everyone has their highs and lows managed through pharmaceuticals, where the population is chemically neutralized, where feelings of fear or ecstasy are no longer even trusted. Is it any wonder that our youth and young adults today are immersing themselves in dystopian stories like the Hunger Games? Stories of society very similar to what I've just described, into which the heroes and the heroines must fight for their survival. Stories about how a few innocents have to figure out how the social system actually works and then how they must overcome their fears, overcome their denial, their violence, and their numbness in order to defeat the enemy. Each one of us is potentially that hero or heroine, facing the political corporate system that is using fear to control actions, to isolate, to separate, is using fear to create a future of fear. And each one of us has the ability to join in with the social whirlwind of fear or to see through it. Now, I want to pause before I go any farther and just say that not all fear is negative. Fear is also an indication of change and growth. I have a huge respect for fear. I know fear. I know it really well. Fear keeps us alert. It stimulates our brain and the nervous system that we may be able to respond to challenging situations. If you've embarked on a journey of personal and spiritual growth, you've come to a crossroads and you need to make a decision. Which way do I go? If it was me, and you were asking me, I would say, choose the direction that has the most fear for you. Why? Because that's where the greatest gifts are, the greatest energy, the greatest challenge, the greatest insights, the greatest depth and growth. And you know the idea that your greatest fear is connected to your greatest joy? How many people on their wedding day felt fear? That hugeness of the decision of committing to this person for the rest of your life. I know fear as when I was an actor, that fear of waiting for the lights to go on and the play to start. I worried if I wasn't afraid, because I needed that fear. That meant I cared about it. That meant that I was going to have enough energy to tell that story, and that my energy would be big enough to reach out and touch the people in the audience. Fear can be connected to taking a risk, a wonderful, exhilarating risk, the risk of taking off on a grand adventure, or the risk of falling in love, the risk of opening your door and stepping out on a day when it's hard to do that, the risk of opening your heart, the risk of trusting another person. Fear is also very good for our own survival. It tells us when we're driving too fast, or maybe walking too close to the edge of the mountain. These are examples of healthy, useful, powerful fear. There are also times and situations in our lives when we fear we may not have the strength or the resources to respond to the situation we find ourselves in. Fear of losing physical capabilities, fear of dying, fear of losing one's home are concrete challenges that require our attention and a huge amount of energy, and that fear can help sustain us to do what we must do in facing those challenges. So in this time of sweeping anxiety, we need to get to know our own fears and reflect on what's useful in our fears. What's really worthy of our attention, and what is a distraction from the good goals, the important goals? We can pierce the dissonance of the generalized fear by grounding ourselves in the things that we choose to be real to us. For example, grounding ourselves in our Unitarian principles, or grounding ourselves in friendship, grounding ourselves in kindness. We can ground ourselves in the commitment to learn and grow. Friendship or kindness, interdependence or justice for all. When we do that, we can take comfort that the choices that we are making today will create a future not of fear, but from its opposite, love. It's love and understanding, compassion and justice that will create a future that I want to live in. But it will not always be easy, my friends. If you have ever wrestled with real fear, you know it is a formidable challenge. It will require hard work. At times, we are going to be uncomfortable. At times, we will feel as if we are completely alone. And at times, we will maybe feel so weak that we want to give up. So I remind you, in those times, you really are not alone. We are here. You need only reach out. You are not alone in this future. You are not alone in making the choices today that creates our children's future. Now, I want to live in a future that is based on love, not fear. I am willing to learn from fear and use fear to teach me about myself and the world. And I will respect fear, but I will not choose to make choices from fear or its neighbor anger, if I can help it. If I am afraid, I will be patient with my fear and listen to what it wants me to pay attention to. I will discern whether this fear is worthy of my connection to it. And if it is not, I will place it away from me. The future I choose will be a future made from choices that are rooted in love. And I hope that you will join me in this future. May it be so.